I'm excited about today's call. I really am. I've been looking forward to it. So thank you for being here, those that are here and those that are listening to the recording. This is Cindy Silva. I'm the host and moderator for today's call. This is the Wisdom Wednesday series, and today we have our guest, Christopher Robert Taylor, also known as Astro Chris. You can find out more about Chris and his services at myastrochris.com. That's his website. We'll talk more about that later as well. His services are offered there. And he also has a really nice little introduction video about a little bit about himself and how he does his readings and offers his astrology to a wide range of people. And it's actually offered via the internet. You can connect with him on his website, so it's not limited to his local area, which is in Sacramento, California. Chris blends inner intuition with a well-developed outer logic. The way he approaches his readings is with empathy and compassion while remaining helpfully objective and honest. He is a natural counselor, and this is evident in his chart as well. Maybe we'll get a little idea about Chris through the call and his Piscean energy. His ultimate goal is to help people align with their inner truth, and he gives his clients a thorough and comprehensive look at themselves that's personal and customized to their unique self. So it's not the cookie cutter type of astrology reading that you will get if you go to Chris with your inquiry about your astrology chart. He's going to provide you something that is 100% unique to you. So today's call, the title for our topic is Astrology and the Great Shift, and one of the points that we made in the description of the call was that there's a rare Venus occultation of the Sun combined with galactic alignment poised for 2012. And so I wanted Chris to maybe start with that and define for us what the term galactic alignment means to you.
Okay. Thank you for the introduction. My name is Chris Taylor with myastrochris.com. And, yeah, I mentioned that Venus occultation with regards to the galactic shift. And an occultation is really just the fancy word for eclipse. You know, we all know what an eclipse of the sun or the moon is when, you know, either the earth is in the way of the moon or the moon is in the way of the sun. With a Venus occultation, you know, this can occur with any of the other planets. But what I'm referring to more specifically is the occultation with the sun. But because Venus is so much further away than, say, our moon, when it actually does occult or eclipse over the sun, we don't really notice, but it is something that does happen periodically. And it's sort of on a 243-year cycle, and that is, it's actually about halfway through that cycle as well. It'll occur, but in terms of occurring in the same sign, the complete cycle occurs every 243 years. And the last time this was occurring was in the sign, I should say, in Gemini, was in the 1760s. And now it's also occurring again in this decade between 2004 and 2012. And what it usually signifies from an astrological standpoint is social reform. That's kind of the basic way to sum it up, the easiest way to say it. And in the 1760s, especially in the U.S., or what would become the U.S., this is when most of the acts like the Stamp Act and you know, other acts that the British were imposing on the colonists were kind of coming out, and it sort of began fueling the fires for the American Revolution. And so, like I said, it has to do with social reform and restructuring values. That's Venus kind of rules values of society. And so we can expect a similar kind of time period, and that I think we can agree that, you know, right now we're kind of in the middle of this 2004-2012 time period, and it's definitely harking back to that kind of experience. And that is culminating around 2012 that I think most people are well aware, especially on this call, well aware of the significance of 2012 in terms of what has been come to be known as the galactic alignment, you know, the end of the Mayan calendar, and all different ways of describing what's occurring at this time. And with the Mayan calendar, I mean, I'm not sure how familiar people are with that, but there is actually kind of the more traditional Mayan calendar, and then there's a recalibrated calendar that's kind of recalibrated according to more modern kind of ways of using the calendar. And the traditional calendar actually culminates or ends or at about October 28th, 2011, whereas the recalibrated calendar actually culminates at December 21st, 2012. That's the one that most people are aware of. In my opinion, the ending of the calendar, you know, looking at it from that standpoint, I don't really view that as much of an ending as it is just a sort of restarting. And when this date actually is, I don't really hold too much emphasis on those beginning and ending dates. But the fact that we're in this time period of that transition, the major transition of that long count of the Mayan calendar, which is over 5,000 years in its period, combined with the endings of all the other smaller calendars, like the Dzogchen and the Tun, and other calendars that are part of the greater calendar system. And this is also happening at a time, scientifically speaking, where we have this alignment of our solar system with the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And it's one of those things that, yes, every year the sun kind of brushes by this zone toward the center of the Milky Way galaxy, but it's only every roughly 26,000 years, 13,000 years, kind of 13,000 is the halfway point of the greater 26,000-year kind of time frame where there's an actual exact alignment, kind of like an eclipse. You know, each month we have new moons and full moons every month, but they're not eclipses every month. Even though the sun and the moon are in the same location, they're not exactly on top of each other. And that's kind of how this works. And so we're kind of in this period, really, where our solar system, looking from the Earth through the sun to the center of the galaxy, is in exact alignment. And that's something that's rare. And this is what's being kind of looked at as the shift into possibly, you know, new energies. There is also a peak in solar activity in 2012, which could also be part of this shifting. And in conjunction with that peak, there's a reduction in our electromagnetic field on Earth, which has been occurring and been measured since the 1800s. Scientists don't understand why or what it means. They just know that it has been reducing. The field has been reducing, and it's accelerating. The more time goes by, it's actually getting faster and faster. And this field, this almost shield, as you will, this is protecting us from a lot of solar flares and that kind of thing. So, you know, what does this all mean? It's kind of up to speculation, really. But the real conclusions here are that we're entering kind of this newer energy field. And it's coinciding with this reorientation of the Mayan calendar. And there is a lot of significant astrological things occurring as well, including the Venus occultation, as well as a lot of other configurations that I want to talk about today. And with that, do you have any more questions, Cindy, or is that a good introduction to that?
It was perfect. I love how you brought science and astrology together, because it's really feeling to me like some of the things that science can't explain, astrology can give us a sense of what's going on. So maybe that's where we're going to bridge that gap between spirituality and science a little bit, where, you know, you're able to give ideas of what's going on with the electromagnetic field astrologically, and science can measure it, but they can't explain it. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. I love that.
Yeah, and going along with that idea of kind of bridging spirituality and science, when we talk about astrology, the signs of Aquarius and Pisces at the end of the zodiac, if you're not familiar, kind of the zodiac starts from Aries, mm-hmm. moves to Taurus, Gemini, and then all the way through to the end. And the last two signs are Aquarius and Pisces. And Aquarius rules things like science. It rules things like logic and technology and those kind of things. Whereas Pisces is more of the spiritual sign. It rules spirituality and, you know, all the unexplained, the things we can't know, but we have to have some sort of faith in because we see it happen, even if we can't explain it. And right now, something a very unique thing is occurring, and it's what's known as a mutual reception. And what I mean by that is each of the signs has sort of a planetary ruler. The ruler of Pisces it kind of has two co-rulers, one being Neptune, one being Jupiter. The ruler of Aquarius is Uranus. And right now, and for the last several years, there's been this mutual reception between Uranus and Neptune, in that Uranus, the ruler of Aquarius, has been in Pisces, and Neptune, the ruler of Pisces, has been in Aquarius. And this has been going on for most of this decade. And right now, to add to that, we have Jupiter in Aquarius conjunct with Neptune. It started back in May. And so we have this sort of mutual reception going on that's amplified by Jupiter. And since Jupiter is also a co-ruler of Pisces, it actually, you know, even amplifies the mutual reception itself. And the last time we had this specific mutual reception was in the 1840s. And so it's not something that happens all the time. It is something that is relatively long periods. And the last time this happened, this kind of followed an immediately followed a brief depression after in the Andrew Jackson administration. He abolished the private banks, etc., and it kind of hurt the economy briefly. And this is kind of an optimistic period following that. And that's what this symbolizes, is an optimism. This mutual reception really signifies a global optimism about the way things are going. Even though things don't seem that great, there's a look at the future like it's going to get better. It has to get better. That's the kind of energy that we have right now that we're going through.
Yeah, I sense that as well. It's like the great divide where there's people that are very optimistic about the changes and people that are very pessimistic, and there doesn't seem to be a in-between.
Mm-hmm. But it's also serving as this bridge between, you know, what we do know and what we can't know. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the Aquarius and the Pisces. And that's really helping to let us see this kind of shifting period from many different angles. We're not just hearing from the mystics. We're not just hearing from the scientists. We're hearing it in a nice blend. And that's a first. That's something that really we haven't been in a situation where we could have that kind of occurrence. And mm-hmm. with the Internet and with this kind of connectivity, like what we're doing right now, you know, this kind of information can get out there for the first time in a long time. And that's a huge part of it.
That's what I was thinking, too, when you were speaking about that, is this kind of communication, this blend, and combine that with the power of the Internet medium as a way to get the information out there quickly to millions of people instantly. It just seems like the perfect combination to take us to that, like you said, that new energy. And then we'll see it like a birthing where, you know, we're going through that birth canal getting kind of squeezed, you know, like contractions of the universe forcing out whatever, you know, what no longer serves us. We're moving to something new, and so metaphorically we're moving from one world of being sort of in a dark enclosed space to a new world where there will be more connectivity and opportunities to expand. And so it's rich with wonderful ways to challenge our limiting beliefs, which if you're hanging on tight to those, it's going to be a tough way to go about the change. But I think you mentioned also something about astrologically how things are lining up to support us in letting go of the rigidness in our belief systems.
Yeah, I mean, this, like you're saying, this, I think a lot of the idea of the shift is this transition into the awareness of oneness. I mean, there's a lot in, you know, not only metaphysics, but in quantum physics right now that is coming together to kind of show the same things. They're kind of showing the same conclusions about energy, about healing, about, you know, how our bodies are made up, really how they're made up, not just that end result physical part that we concentrate on, but all of the energy fields that feed that physical form. And that's, like I said, being shown from many different angles, from the metaphysical standpoint as well as actual quantum measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's really where we're headed. I think, you know, looking at it from a very positive standpoint, it's really what we're headed toward. But we really can't get there without some hiccups because of the resistance, you know. And that's one of the things I want to talk about as well, because a big configuration that's kind of occurring and kind of forming as we speak, peaking over the next couple of years, is this cardinal T-square. And I know that sounds like, you know, words that definitely need to be explained. In astrology, there are certain signs that are cardinal signs, and they're the ones that represent the entry into the different seasons. So Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. These are when the sun enters these signs, these are the beginnings of each season. This is the equinoxes and the solstices. And these signs, whenever there are major outer planets in these signs, it usually coincides with major new beginnings, new starts. You know, these cardinal energies all about newness. It's starting the new season. It's starting a new time period. And right now, it's not a matter of having one or two. We have three major players in cardinal signs, and they're not just in the signs, but they're actually mathematically in aspect to each other, making, you know, forming these exact aspects. So we have the three players we're talking about in this case are Pluto, Uranus, and Saturn. These are outer planets. They move slowly, and they don't interact with each other on a regular basis. It's not something that happens, you know, every year or every couple of years. This is more on a decadal sort of time scale that these things will occur. And the last time all three of these players were interacting with each other was the 1960s. And this was like the mid to late 1960s. And Pluto, what that represents just in general, is this sort of transformation energy, death and rebirth. It's about truth and unleashing truth. Uranus is about revolution, revolutionary change, quick happenings, things we can't control, things that just change without us having any say. Saturn is kind of that law planet, the planet of laws and restrictions, but also from, on a positive side is that planet of formation, you know, forming things, making things real. And right now, like I said, all three of these are working together. Back in the 1960s, what we had was we had Pluto and Uranus conjunct, and they were opposing Saturn. Pluto and Uranus in Virgo, Saturn in Pisces. And this Pluto-Uranus on its own signified this real transformation and revolution. And I think most people that were around in the mid to late 60s would agree that around the world, this was really a point of people just kind of saying, you know, we're not going to take it anymore. The truth has to come out. This is the reality about what our the corporate world is doing, and this is the reality about the environment, and this is the reality about civil rights, you know, and this is all these things came to a head, and it started that new Pluto-Uranus cycle. And that first test to that cycle is coming up as we speak. Also in that time, we have Saturn opposing this, and Saturn opposing Uranus itself. Just that alone was kind of part of the culmination of a cycle, of the Saturn-Uranus cycle. And we're in the same kind of time period right now. We have Saturn opposing Uranus, only in the opposite signs. We have Uranus in Pisces and Saturn in Virgo. But it's the same kind of issues. And one thing that I'll just bring up now is, you know, just as an example, we had the Medicare Act in 1965 came out, and that was with this Saturn-Uranus opposition. Now, all of a sudden, we have another kind of period of crisis of what do we do, which direction do we head. This Uranus-Saturn is about newness versus the old. It's when they're in opposition, you're either doing something new or you're doing something old. The first time we saw this opposition in the most recent period of the opposition was November 4, 2008. It was exact that date for the first time since the 60s, and that was the date of the election. People were choosing new versus old. And whenever this happens, it's always the new that takes, basically signifying a period of newness, but not without the struggles and the resistance to keep things the old way. And so this kind of theme is happening again. This time, however, this opposition is being squared, a 90-degree angle to both by Pluto. So if you picture a circle representing the chart, and Saturn and Uranus on one end of each other, opposing each other, and Pluto halfway between both of them, forming a 90-degree angle, this is the kind of configuration we're talking about. This is a very powerful, powerful, what's known as a T-square. This is in cardinal signs, in the early part of cardinal signs, is very signifying of big changes, big transformations, you know, changing new structures and that kind of thing.
It almost sounds like a collective Saturn return.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. It's really a point of, you know, now, this is the time to do something, to take action, to create that massive transformation. And it goes beyond, you know, the change mantra that, you know, with Obama and everything. It goes well beyond that. It's more of, you know, transformation is a much deeper way of saying change than just the word change. And that's what we're talking about. It's more of a transformation, you know, almost unrecognizable to what we know from before.
Well, and for some people that'll be very exciting again, and for others it will be, you know, feel like a threat and
yes,
create a lot of fear. So I imagine we're going to be seeing, even as we are now, but on an increased level, more and more things surfacing in the media regarding the collapse of certain things. And again, we have a choice of how we want to see that, through which lenses we want to perceive that as it being something positive or negative.
Yeah, I mean, if we just look at Pluto alone, Pluto in Capricorn, Pluto just entered Capricorn in 2008, and it will be with, you know, it'll be in Capricorn until about 2024, and so it's a pretty long period of time that it spends in a sign. The last time that Pluto was in Capricorn was in the 1760s and 1770s, and again, it goes back to that Venus occultation that I mentioned, of that social reform. Whenever Pluto goes through Capricorn, it represents a transformation of the structure, a transformation of leadership, a transformation of how we get around in the world. In the 1760s and 1770s, obviously this was the Industrial Revolution as well as the American Revolution. The American Revolution was basically that point in time where, you know, freedom didn't exist at that time, but yet there was this tiny little group of people that said, we're going to have it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what that led to was the French Revolution and other revolutions, and it's still today that ripple effect from that Pluto and Capricorn period in the 1760s and 1770s is still happening, and we're entering it again.
Mm-hmm.
And the time before that, the 1760s and 1770s, was in the early 1500s. And what happened then was the Protestant Reformation. This is when, you know, Catholicism ruled. If you were a Christian, you were Catholic, and that was it. It was, you know, there were rules about what you believed, et cetera. And, you know, Martin Luther went up, pinned the notes on the door of a church, and that began a ripple effect that's still, again, oh, you know, 500 years later almost, is still with us. So these are not small events, not small time periods, and we're in one right now.
Yeah, and every, I guess, industry has their own way of looking at it, and I don't know if industry is the right term, but every, let's say, it's a morphogenetic field of belief systems, like astrology has its way of looking at it, and esoteric mysticism has its way of looking at it, psychology, and everybody's kind of got their own little pockets of theories on this, and it just feels like they're all sort of overlapping and blending until we come into this agreement that indeed it's all the same but a different language, similar to how we were separated, you know, the religions were separated because their language was different, but basically it essentially saying all saying the same thing. So the walls seem to be coming down, and the overlap and the blend seems to be bringing us all together in an agreement that something's happening, and it's beyond what we can comprehend, but we're doing our best to identify it and move with it and embrace it as something positive. I see that in lots of different venues, people using different language to describe it, but feeling as though it's kind of winding inward towards a central core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and this transformation of structures, could, you know, it could easily be this new awareness that, you know, all the separation didn't really exist in the first place, and kind of
perfect,
restructuring things according to that new truth.
Yeah.
And that's a lot about what this is. And so along with these kind of themes, I wanted to talk about just the general cycles, the general planetary cycles, and which ones we're involved in now, other than the ones I've just mentioned. And, kind of, and then I want to talk about how that applies directly to the U.S. in terms of its finances, because this is what's going to be hit the biggest, I think, in the next few years. And so just to introduce the idea of planetary cycles, I think most of us are familiar with the idea of a new moon and a full moon. You know, the new moon is when the moon and the sun are in the same location. That's why we don't see the moon at that time period. And then the full moon is when the moon is on the opposite side of the Earth and the sun, and that's why it's fully illuminated. Now, this process of going from a new moon to a full moon and back is kind of four stages. We have the new moon itself, it starts it, then the first quarter, which is this waxing square, is what it really is. It's when the moon is now 90 degrees from the sun. And we call it waxing because it's coming from the new moon toward the full moon. Then we hit the full moon. The full moon is this sort of culmination of what started at the new moon. Then we come back to another 90-degree square, but this is now the waning square, the waning or releasing 90-degree angle. And then back to another new beginning, a new start. And these waxing and waning squares are both periods of tension relative to that what was set off in that new moon. The waxing square, that first square, is tension related to growth, whereas that waning square is tension related to decay, you know, of that idea and that kind of thing. So with this concept in our heads, we can also look at this with every dual planet interaction. So we can look at this in terms of how Jupiter and Saturn interact, how Jupiter and Neptune interact, etc. And there is about five or six of these cycles that we are at turning points for, either at the waning or waxing squares, at the full moon point, or at that new moon kind of point. And I just wanted to discuss a few of those just briefly and just say when it started and what we're in now. And so the first one is the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. So when Jupiter and Saturn are in the same position, that's that new moon in terms of that. The last time we had that was right around 2000. This was May of 2000, and it's been waxing basically until about 2010. So in 2010, it'll reach the full moon phase. Jupiter will be opposing Saturn, in other words. So roughly 9 years ago, it was the new beginning of this, and then about a year from now will be the culmination of this. And this Jupiter-Saturn cycle usually signifies social and financial kind of things. It's very society and rules and laws and that kind of thing. And if we notice back in the beginning of this decade, around 2000 when it started, that's when a lot of foreign affairs and homeland security issues sort of were transformed once the Bush administration took over. And with this Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, it actually happened in Taurus, which is an Earth sign. It's about resources, et cetera. And so this is sort of this pattern we started in 2000. And we're going to come to some kind of culmination again here in 2010. And so I'll leave that at that for that. And then you're going to see as I go through these that this 2010 kind of period, 2012, it all kind of shines, kind of opens up. We realize a lot of these things are coming to fruition or coming to some kind of challenge point right as we speak. The next one is the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction. And like I mentioned before, we are actually beginning a new Jupiter-Neptune cycle as we speak. I said Jupiter and Neptune are conjunct in Aquarius. So this is our new optimism round, our new round of idealism and blending this, religion or spiritual beliefs into our society a little bit. And so this is a 13-year cycle that's starting right about now, 2009. And, you know, it'll go through its waxing and full stages, et cetera, over the next 13 years. So this new round of optimism isn't something that's going to go away completely, but the point is that it's starting, and it will grow from here over the next decade or more. Then the next one I want to talk about is the Saturn-Uranus cycle. We talked about how Saturn and Uranus were opposing each other in the 60s. They're opposing each other now. And when they conjunct each other, that starts this new cycle. Saturn being restriction and rules and form, Uranus being kind of just wild rebellion and change, etc. And the latest cycle started in the late 1980s. And in the late 1980s, I mean, what was really going on, this cycle had a lot to do with making decisions about capitalism versus socialism and those kind of things, you know, this conservative cycle versus are we going to be, you know, liberal versus conservative, et cetera. And what in the late 1980s, when we had, you know, Reagan and then George Bush Sr. in office, what was going on then was there was a healthcare cost crisis in the late 1980s, and there was a lot of things that were done as a result of that to eliminate some of the costs from the taxpayers because it was costing too much. And so the things that started around there relative to healthcare are now coming to fruition in this full moon stage, this opposition stage that we're in now. And that opposition stage started in 2008, and it will continue through 2010, ending around August 2010, which is around when this Jupiter-Saturn opposition is also going to happen, around August 2010. With Saturn and Pluto, what we have is, again, that planet of restriction, Saturn, and, you know, rules, with Pluto, which is this planet of power and transformation. And when we combine those two together, Saturn and Pluto, what we get is this sort of underhanded power. This Pluto is, like, about digging underneath, getting power and ruling from a more hidden aspect. It's also, you know, hiding, just basically hiding where the actual intent of the law is coming from. And the latest Saturn-Pluto conjunction or new moon period was in the early 1980s. This is when most of these terrorist groups in the Middle East really started to come together, in the early 1980s. The culmination point of this, the full moon phase, when Saturn was opposing Pluto, you know, I think if you took a guess, when do you think that happened? It actually happened right around 2001. The 9/11 and all that, this was when the Saturn and Pluto cycle that started in the early 80s came to culmination. And there was a culmination of what began in the early 1980s. Right now, we are in a waning square. In other words, Saturn is about to square Pluto starting in November, in a few months, through about August of 2010. Again, this August 2010 keeps coming up. But so this fall, through the end of next summer, we have this waning square. So this is that decay, this stress as a result of decay. So it started in the early 80s. It culminated around 2001, and now it's waning. And so this Saturn-Pluto energy is sort of on its way out, at least in terms of that cycle. In terms of that cycle, there is, but part of this on its way out kind of energy is the truth coming out. So I think, you know, November to August is really a period of, you know, really finding out who was behind all this terrorism, especially the 9/11 attacks, finding out how it really was structured. You know, were these terrorists funded, you know, by sources that we didn't know of to this point? Was there, you know, what were the secrets behind this? These secrets will come out over this period, and it'll be something that will be dropping and leaving behind. The final one that I want to talk about is the Uranus-Pluto. And I mentioned this earlier. This is the one that they came into conjunction in the mid to late 1960s. This is about social reform and technology and the environment. This is about all these kinds of new awarenesses. And what's happening now is we're coming into, and this will be 2012 to 2015, so it's a little bit after some of the stuff I've talked about earlier, but we're coming into that waxing square. So it conjuncted in the 60s, and now it's finally coming to its first waxing square, that tension due to growth. So this growth of this technology and, you know, adherence to the environment, et cetera, and social reform, all these ideas that came out in the 60s now have this opportunity to be put in place, but not without, obviously, you know, a struggle as we see it. Does that bring up any questions at this point?
Thank you. That's... we'll open it up for questions here in just a minute, but I do really appreciate how you're able to identify these patterns, and especially how you take the microcosmic pattern of the moon in a 28-day cycle through its waxing and waning phase and expand that out into the bigger picture of the planets doing the similar cycle, and it really helps to identify exactly what you're talking about and see this through the ages and these time frames, and to not only be able to predict it, but to be able to understand what's happening, when it's happening, and why it's happening, so that we don't become a victim of these sort of things and then assume automatically something's wrong and we need to fix it. It's like a natural cycle, like we see our nature go through a cycle of seasons where the leaves die and fall away and come back in the spring. It's similar in this way, but it's working on what you said before at the beginning of the call, social reform.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it's all about. And now what I want to do is kind of take those kind of concepts that are happening more like on a global scale and just really pinpoint them into the chart of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one planet that really shows up that's going to really get hit by this sort of T-square in cardinal signs, and that's Venus, the country's Venus. And Venus represents the country's finances, its resources, et cetera. And so that's why I mentioned earlier about talking about the U.S. in terms of its finances. And this seems to be the biggest, most significant piece that's going to be hit by these configurations that I just mentioned. And before I go into that, the chart for the U.S., what I have is what most astrologers use. There is some disagreement as far as what chart should actually be used for the U.S. This is what's known as the Sibley chart. It's dated July 4th, 1776, Philadelphia, at 5:10 p.m. local time. And so just to put that out there so we understand what I'm actually looking at. And so we have a chart that's considered the birth chart when the Declaration of Independence was actually approved and signed and finished. There is some argument that July 2nd was another day that this could have happened. It was just not finalized until July 4th, et cetera. But most readings that I've looked at use this chart, and I like this chart too. I think it really does work when it comes to timing. I've looked at different things. What I want to, just to introduce this before I talk about Venus is, if you're not familiar with charts, the ascendant of the chart is the kind of leftmost point of the chart. It's a very important piece. It's where the first house out of the 12 houses start, and it's kind of like the birth zone. It's where things are birthed in that chart when things come around to that point. And the ascendant point in the U.S.'s chart, the chart that I'm using, is at about 12 degrees Sagittarius. Okay, and when we look at some of the major outer planets and when they move through these places, et cetera, when a major outer planet is going to cross the ascendant, it's going to be a big, big, significant time period. This is true for individuals as well as nations. And we look at Pluto, the slowest mover of them all, which hasn't even made one trip around the zodiac since the U.S. was formed in 1776. That actually comes up around 2020, 2022, I believe, in that range, is when we'd actually have our Pluto return, which is the return of Pluto to its original position. And so that's a significant time period. And we're kind of entering that, we're gradually entering that time period, and it would signify a time when this nation would have to transform or be destroyed. And that's the kind of, that's what Pluto gives you, those two options. It's transform or be destroyed. In most cases, a Plutonian transit is a massive transformation. It's almost never going to be a destruction, but it really, what it is a destruction of the way it was and a birth of the way it now is. But the point I wanted to bring up was that Pluto, this planet of transformation and things, crossed the ascendant of the U.S. It kind of flirted with the ascendant. It kind of went back and forth over it between the period of January 2000 in October 2001. So we understand at the end of this period, September of 2001, this was 9/11. This is, this signifies this transformation of how the United States comes across. It is basically gone from a defensive nation to an offensive nation. And that was the kind of turning point. Is with Pluto in the first house of an individual's chart, we would say this person is now going through a period of, coming into their own power and making things happen for themselves instead of letting things happen, et cetera. And that's the kind of thing that when Pluto crossed the ascendant, we shifted into this sort of new way of being as a country. And so that's just to kind of introduce the timing and how the timing works out in major configurations, et cetera. Also, with this T-square and the mutual reception that I mentioned, I wanted to mention where those were in the chart. The mutual reception that, first of all, that Jupiter-Neptune conjunction, and, you know, with the Uranus and Pisces as well. This Jupiter-Neptune conjunction falls right on the moon of the U.S., and the moon represents the people. So this optimism is, you know, being basically flooded onto the people. The people of this country right now are full of optimism, even if, like we mentioned before, you know, we're looking at the things right now and saying, you know, things could be better, et cetera. There is an optimistic kind of feel that things are about to turn. Things are about to get better. The stock market is about to rise, you know. And I would think there's every indication that the next 2 months the stock market probably will rise. But we'll talk about what I think, what will probably happen just briefly after that. But so we have the nation's people being pretty optimistic right now. The T-square itself, this Pluto squaring the Saturn-Uranus opposition, where this falls is right on these, right in these angular houses. We talked about the cardinal signs. The angular houses are the same concept as the cardinal signs. It is this first house, fourth house, seventh house, tenth house of the chart. It forms these four corners, in other words. And where this is falling is Pluto is falling in the first house. Saturn is going to fall in the 10th house, right at the top of the chart, and Uranus is going to fall right at the bottom of the chart. So these are very significant points. So, you know, not an insignificant transit for the country itself of the U.S. And with Venus kind of sitting over there in the cardinal sign of Cancer in the 7th house, that angular house, in the early degrees of Cancer, it's going to be getting hit by all three of these configurations, the Saturn, Uranus, and Pluto, will all be hitting Venus at some point from 2009 right now through about 2015 at different points. This Venus, this representation of finances and values and resources of the U.S., is going to be stressed. It's going to be strained. It's going to be forced to change. That's what we're seeing. And if we take it kind of individually, the same concept of these cycles. When a planet, let's say, first conjuncted or was at the same position of this Venus in Cancer of the U.S., this started a new cycle. So, for example, I'll talk about Pluto first. So Pluto was conjunct Venus in around 1916, 1917, right around the end of World War I. And this started a new cycle of this Plutonian and Venus kind of energy. And what happened around 1916, 1917, well, first of all, there was what's called the Paris Economy Pact. And the U.S. had some issues with this because it dealt with this kind of government ownership of manufacturing and et cetera, and things that the U.S. just wasn't really into. And it led to this new code, U.S. Code Title 19, Section 1332C. And that code, part of that code, what it did was it gave the U.S. International Trade Commission the power to investigate the Paris Economy Pact and similar organizations arrangements in Europe. So it's sort of like we gave ourselves permission to sort of investigate these pacts in Europe. And it, on the books, it probably still exists as something we have the power to do. And that was started in 1916, 1917. Also in that same time period, we had the Revenue Act and the War Revenue Act of 1916 and 1917, which both increased taxes to fund World War I. And this included higher percentage increases for the wealthy and taxes on estates and excess business profits. So you can see this kind of trend that was started right around then. Then what happened was Pluto came to its first waxing square to Venus. Remember, it was conjunct, and then it moved about 90 degrees away from Venus, which takes a while because Pluto moves slowly. We had the first waxing square. This waxing square occurred in the early 1970s. In the early 1970s, we had a recession. We had Watergate. We had an oil crisis. And all of this led to some tax cuts. So this was the first growing pains as a result of some of these, you know, things that were initiated in 1916, 1917. If you look at the fact that part of what was initiated then was this permission to investigate, you know, European issues of money, et cetera, we have Watergate, which kind of represents this sort of permission for someone to come in and you know, to tap wires and to listen and et cetera. So it was sort of a growing pain in terms of that. It was also a growing pain in terms of having to cut taxes that, you know, in some ways came about due to some tax hikes, a tax hike kind of cycle that started around 1916, 1917. Now what we're doing is coming into this opposition phase, this culmination phase of all of this, these sort of issues, taxes versus, you know, sort of government ownership of manufacturing, these kind of things. These issues are coming to culmination, and this is 2009, 2010. We're in it right now, this culmination of, like, how do we use our money, et cetera? What is our rights to money? Who has a right? Who should be paying taxes versus who doesn't have to pay taxes? These kind of issues are really coming up right now in terms of Pluto. In terms of Saturn alone, Saturn made its first conjunction or new moon phase with Venus in the early summer of 2003. It was a very quick, it was in June of 2003, very quick couple of week period. And what happened in that early summer of 2003 was from March to June of 2003, there was a pretty decent steady rise in the stock market. Stocks were going up. They were going up pretty good. And all of a sudden, it flattened out. From about June to August, it just flattened out. And then it kind of broke, and it kind of started moving again. But it flattened out. And we can expect this, since this represents the birthing of a new cycle, a kind of a flattening of the economy, this waxing square, this first waxing square of Saturn to Venus, which is occurring starting in November through about August of 2010, which also, like I said before, that Saturn square Venus also represents on a global level this sort of truth coming about with regards to the terrorist groups that started in the early 80s, etc. But from the U.S.'s standpoint, in terms of finances, this is also a period of probably another flattening of the economy due to that starting of that cycle. So with the optimism happening right now, I would suspect that September and October, even into November slightly, would be a period of growth in the stock market. Some optimism, you know, things are turning around, people are starting to look up. And then once this comes in around the holidays through the end of next summer, there's a flattening and a kind of stalemate in the stock market. It really isn't going anywhere. And you know, that's what we can kind of expect. In terms of Uranus now, before I go to that, sticking with Saturn, if you're not familiar with the Saturn return concept, I know, Cindy, you mentioned it earlier, the Saturn return. Saturn goes around about once every 29 and a half years, roughly 30 years, and it's a pretty big culminating cycle, especially for individuals. It really represents periods of maturity and growth. And for nations, it's going to be a period of certain laws that are enacted because Saturn represents laws. For the U.S., we have Saturn in the 10th house of law and structure, and also of sort of boundaries, kind of defining our boundaries with other nations. And when we look at sort of what the themes have been for all the Saturn returns, all the times that Saturn has come back to its new moon phase with Saturn itself, coming back, Saturn conjunct Saturn, there's a very similar theme that goes through this. I went back to the Civil War, basically. Every 30 years, we can come up and we have a very similar theme. In the 1860s, there was a law, during one of these Saturn returns, there was a law that encouraged immigration to boost labor, basically. Okay. Then, again, in 1893, this whole idea of immigration came up again in terms of boundaries and borders, et cetera. And there was the immigration law of 1893. And what this did was it required these kind of full details to be disclosed whenever a ship was docking in the U.S., that you had to fully disclose who was on your ship, what they were doing, where they were from, what good things to do. But again, it was that same theme of immigration and laws coming up. Then from the fall of 1922 to the summer of 1923, this is another period of a Saturn return for the U.S., and this is when the alien land laws came out. And what this did was it prevented property ownership for aging immigrants. So again, the theme of immigration and law, and kind of making laws about immigration. Then again, the 1950s, December of 51 through September of 52, the Immigration and Nationality Act came out in June of 1952, So yet another act related to immigration and, you know, and protecting our borders. Then again, in the early 80s, we had this ruling. It was this Plyer versus Doe. And what it basically said was that the state could not deny education funding for children who were illegal immigrants. So again, it was this, each time we have a different way of dealing with immigration in terms of how either we're encouraging it or we're discouraging it. But either way, there's a time period that comes around whenever there's a Saturn return that says this is the time to do that. And just after August 2010, in the fall of 2010, is when the U.S. will experience another Saturn return. So we can expect, with all this activity going on between now and 2010, it will kind of culminate, and there may be some more decisions about what we do with our borders in next fall of 2010.
Wow, you really know your history. I'm quite impressed.
Yeah, I did quite a bit of research just to find these things, and I, you know, having some idea, but just wanted to verify when these things actually happen, and actually being somewhat surprised at how much they aligned. Although I'm not as surprised as I used to be when I'm looking into this kind of stuff.
You're excellent at tracking patterns. I can tell you that. Well, I just want to make sure we have time. We're coming up to the end of our call here to make sure we will open for questions. And then also I want to give you a chance to talk to the listeners about your services and how people can reach you and what it would require to have a session with you regarding individual charts. And I imagine you do solar return charts and all of the different things. So what would you like our listeners to know about your services and how to reach you for a reading?
I do offer a wide array of services, and my website, I list everything that I do. And there's also some things I can do that are more, just sort of not structured. You know, I did like an eclipse report for someone before that was interested in how the current eclipses are helping them. So things like that I can just do. But I do have a list of specific services that I offer, like natal chart analysis, like relationship analysis, you know, getting two individuals plus their third entity, the relationship itself, and looking at that. Solar returns, like you mentioned, that's basically a birthday chart, you know, taking a look at their birthday for the year, what's going on. I do monthly lunar return charts, you know, when your moon returns to its lunar position in your natal chart, that's a lunar return. That gives some themes for the month. I'll do relocation charts, that are if you're going to move or, you know, looking at how a certain area might affect you relative to your natal chart, et cetera. So there's a whole wide array of different services I offer. And, you know, I can do in-person if you're in the Sacramento area, Northern California. I also go to the Bay Area as well. Then there's you can also do it over the phone like this. I can easily do a phone reading. I have capability to do Skype as well, so we can do that over the Internet. I have a video phone that I could use if you had a video phone. And then I also offer a write-up, and I do charge a 25% premium for the write-up just because it takes more time, and I do put a lot of energy into the write-up and make sure that it is unique. You know, you're not going to find a cookie-cutter write-up that I'm copying and pasting from just because you have the sun in the seventh house, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be relative to how all your planets are interacting and my opinion about what, you know, what your sort of core truth is and ways that you can align with that within your current life.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And I will be contacting you when I get back from my trip to do an individual reading. And what are your prices, okay, Chris? I suppose because you have such an array, it's really
They're all different. And I do list them on the website.
Okay, we'll go there.
You can just check myastrochris.com. And if you go to my personal consultations on the side there, click on that, you can easily see what I offer and then, you know, how much I offered for. And like I said, it varies. And you can do combinations and get reductions. And, you know, I also offer brief free readings on a little section of my website called On the Spot, where I just do a brief reading, do a write-up, and I post it. And it's just a way for me to kind of advertise sort of samples of what kind of information that a person can get. And so it's a way for me to get something out of it, and that's why I do it, you know, for free. Basically, if someone wanted to get a brief reading, it's not going to be as comprehensive, but it's a way to get a little something and it'll get posted on there. And then, you know, confidentiality is obviously important, and I don't use names or birthdays if that's not wanted. And but that's a way, also another way that you can get a reading with me.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to go ahead and open the line and see if anyone has any questions. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
This is Rainey. There's just so many questions. I don't even know how to formulate them right now, and I just have a big comment to say, wow, I'm just blown away. This is so much to process, and I just love it. And I'm definitely – it's Chris, right?
Yes.
C-H-R-I-S?
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely going to do a reading sometime soon. And I just – because I have so many questions, I wouldn't even know where to be. And I know we're short of time, but thank you. That was just awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, so go to myastrochris.com, and you can – email Chris through his website.
I will do that, and I guess this is a question. I guess it's been in my head for a long time. It's kind of a general astrology question because some of the other things are too complicated to bring up. But just briefly, if you could, I have 4 grandchildren. They were all born by cesarean section. It seems to be the thing to do these days, and I've often wondered how that really affects their time of birth, rather than, you know, them deciding when they're coming in, a doctor and his convenience, or the mother, you know, deciding, well, I'd rather have it on this day. Can you just tell a little bit about how that might affect the child's chart?
I get that question so much, that, but yeah, it's a really good question. In my opinion, I mean, you mentioned, like, you know, it was according to the doctor's convenience and an appointment and that kind of thing, and it's true. But how do we know that, you know, isn't being directed by something else, you know? There's no way to know. And
yeah, I've heard that too, but it just seems like it's rampant now. I mean, hardly anybody has a natural birth.
The way I see it, and the way most astrology kind of looks at this, is the contract or the natal chart isn't signed until the first breath is taken, because that's when that individual basically separates from the mother. To that point, all oxygen and all nutrients of every kind came through the mother. And
right.
So until the point that this individual life form actually takes responsibility for its own life, the contract hasn't been signed. So that signifies a start of astrological life. Not to make an argument that you're not alive until that point, but from an astrological standpoint, in terms of your taking responsibility for the energies that you are coming in with. That's the point.
So you're saying then that the soul coming in is still basically deciding when they're going to be born, even though
yes.
The decision to do a cesarean is made, you know, between the mother and the doctor, rather than the
yes.
soul saying, I'm going to come in at 2 o'clock in the morning.
It is still undefined from a soul perspective until the point when they say, here it is. I just took responsibility for it, and my contract is now signed in a way, you know. So in my opinion, I don't think it affects anything, because I think that just creates the window for whomever intends for that experience.
So not to worry about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I think it's all, it doesn't matter how you come in, it's just that you do, and that's about it.
Okay. Well, that takes a little pressure off me, because I've been very concerned about that.
Well, I know myself. I was born, I had an appointment to be born. I wasn't a cesarean, but, I mean, it was, you know, come in at this time, and we're going to make sure it happens. So, you know, I'm someone that could have been born at a different time as well, but I was born when I was born. And I think, you know, looking at my chart and resonating with the kind of information that's there, I think that I wanted to be born at that time.
And it still fits pretty like a glove, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine if it was different. So I think it makes sense that I was, you know, that it was a doctor's appointment. I don't know if that was an accident, you know. I think that
right.
that's my opinion.
Well, thank you for your feedback on that.
No problem.
Thank you for your question, Rainey. Well, Chris, you did a fantastic job, and I really appreciate you being on the call and taking your time to share just the depth of knowledge and wisdom that you have, a perfect blend. I really do honor
Amen
you.
To that.
Yeah, it is really a great blend of logic and intuition, like you say. And I want to talk with you more about my chart, and I've had lots of different readings, but I think that what you're describing, you have a niche of sorts that you do something a little bit different with these readings that are more personalized, so I really want to experience that. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach me through the Metaphysical Wisdom website.
Great.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Love you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.